Welcome to the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore AV Radio. To subscribe to the pod and the blog, make sure you go to SouthShoreAV.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAV.com. My feelings about what has transpired in the last week or so has been of raw emotions. It's been of anger, of sadness, of despair, of disdain, and of numbness. It's not exactly a secret that black people have been mistreated by police at a far higher ratio than any other race in America. But these last two shootings by police officers on people who have been either unarmed or not threatening the lives of other police officers or anyone else for that matter has left a very sad feeling at the pit of our stomachs, which was then followed the next night by the mass shooting of Dallas police officers. Now, I don't want to act like I have all the answers to solve these issues, but we really need to find the right ones here, and as soon as possible. I know, personally, that I can't watch any more of these videos of black people being gunned down by police that we're not deserving anymore. I can't. I'm done. This needs to stop. Now. And in the midst of racism, biases, and perceptions, I feel like more of the world is starting to feel like I do, slowly but surely. At least that's what I hope and feel. Today's podcast is a roundtable discussion that I had with my past contributors of my South Shore AV site, Hedley and Kevin, and I thank them very much for coming on this. We're going to be discussing our thoughts and our reactions to what we saw last week. This was recorded on July 9th, 2 days after the aftermath of the police shootings. I felt like this conversation was needed. This is the AV Podcast. Trayvon Martin, Sandra Bland, Katherine Johnston, Sean Bell, Eric Garner, Rakia Boyd, Amadou Diallo, Mike Brown, Kimani Gray, Kenneth Chamberlain, Travaris McGill, Tamir Rice, Ayanna Stanley Jones, Freddie Gray, John Crawford. All of those deaths are at the hands of police officers. And the one thing that they all have in common is each one of the officers got off. Every single one of those cases was no conviction. It's a systematic failure of the American justice system as to what's happening right now in America. I'd like to introduce one of my guests here. He's a past contributor to the blog. He's written for the Tribe Called Quest post that we had a couple of years ago. And he was one of my guests of the AV Podcast. So this is Kevin. And my second guest is also a past contributor to the blog. He's also the co-host of the VI Players Podcast. I'd like to welcome Hedley as well.
What's good? What's good?
So, brothers, I don't know what to say, man. This has been an extremely tragic week that's been happening right now. And I'd like to get some of your initial thoughts on... I'll start with you, Hedley, first. But I'd like to get your initial thoughts on just what you've experienced just this week with all the news and everything that's been happening with the shootings and also the attack on the police officers.
You wish that this would be the last time. It almost feels like deja vu because it felt like it was just last year. And even less than that with other cases that doesn't get the same magnitude as these ones, partly because so much of it was captured. But it just seems like every day you're just waiting for change. And with some of the transactions that happened this week, I feel like there's a chance for maybe a little bit more advances. You know, obviously we'll be talking about that a little bit further throughout the course of the call. But it's just sadness. And I think, especially now with having young kids, it just makes me feel really scared.
And what are your thoughts, Kevin?
I think these are some of the darkest days in American history, in North American history. I think the illusion that everything's cool and everything's all right, I think that myth has been shattered. I think there's a huge reality check that needs to be had, because this isn't getting any better. It's getting worse, more depressing, more embarrassing, and unfortunately more frequent.
Yeah, and just to add, honestly, it's it harkens back to the Rodney King riots. That was back in 92. And that one, obviously, as everybody knows, was when the four officers got no convictions off the beating of Rodney King, even though there was clear video of him basically getting his ass whipped. Not even basically, getting his ass whooped completely. And you know, back then I was about 13 years old, and it's sad to think that basically 20 something years later, we're back here at this place again, you know, asking these same questions. Especially with the shooting at Falcon Heights in Minnesota. I know some friends of mine who's was very emotional, myself included, to be honest. But like my eyes were basically watery the whole day. Like I was so angry, just wondering why this is continuing to happen. For those who have been living under a rock, as you know, this is when a police officer shot the driver of the car after he was complying with police. He tried to get his ID. He let the officers know that I do have a registered gun and I have a permit for it. And when he went to go pull it out, he lost his life. Now, even with that said, first of all, even before we get a little further, I'd love to give major shout outs to Diamond Reynolds, the girlfriend of the driver, to have that, the wits about her, to basically go ahead and start recording live stream on Facebook, and not even doing like a video, but just putting it live stream immediately on Facebook to get this word across. If I was in her situation, I don't know if I would have had my wits about her to do that. Now, I don't know about you, Kev, but like personally, I think that was probably one of the smartest things that came out of this, because it really shone a light. Especially the fact that it came the day after the Baton Rouge shootings. You know, it shone a light as to everything that's been happening with police. If you've been living under a rock for the last 25 years, and somebody up to you and said, you know what, this is what's been happening with black people for the last decades and centuries, and you sat back and said, no, that can't be true, police aren't doing that. That video was the prime example once again, and it was so clear. And the thing that shook me the most was how fearful the cop was. You know, you're hearing the cop screaming. He seems more scared than Diamond. You know what I mean?
I do. I have to say, yes, she did have the wherewithal to record the video and post it so that people can see it. But honestly, given the fact that Rodney King was over 20 years ago, we would have hoped that there would have been some sort of change. It doesn't appear that there has been any.
Right.
Now, she's recorded this footage and put it out there, but honestly, at this point, at this stage, with the trauma and the stress and just the repeated incident time after time after time, did she really have to record it?
Yeah.
Wait, you know what? Let me touch base on this. I'll tell you one thing. I was one of those guys that Calvin was talking about, that was really emotional. I actually broke down in tears when I saw it. Like, when I actually saw the video at first, I didn't even know what it was, because I literally, somebody just sent the link and I watched it and I was like, am I watching a movie? Like, what is this? When I realized what I was seeing, do you realize we saw a live human being take his last breath? Of all the videos that of shootings or tapes or whatever the case may be, we've never actually seen a person take its last breath on TV through the brutality of the cops. And the difference, and the reason why I say it is important, because the difference with this one, with all the other ones, they always have an excuse. Like, even if you go, let's just take the Rodney King. He was basically in a police chase. You know what I mean? Multiple arrests, whatever the case may be. This guy, by all points and purposes, was a law-abiding citizen. He was a father. He worked in the school board. And the thing is, he was a licensed carrier. He notified the police that he had it, asked for instructions by any instructor. He did everything feasibly possible by the book. To the point, to a fault, because the guy asked, the cop asked for his ID, and he's reaching for his ID. Like, as much as they try to, you know, with all the rest, they try to twist it and turn the picture and stuff like that. Obviously, we didn't see the shooting itself. There's corroboration on both sides that he moved after asking for ID. And the fact that we saw that, and it's so compelling to see exactly the stages right afterward and seeing this guy basically take his last breath, to me, like, shook me to the core.
Yeah. And I think the scariest part of this is the fact that there was a 4-year-old in the car. Now, as a police officer, you got to have, I mean, you're a human being. You got to have some sort of common sense. Do you think that the driver, any driver, much less a black driver, do you think this guy is going to pull out a gun in front of his 4-year-old daughter and his fiance and start shooting at you?
So the difference between that is that common sense is not, you don't have to bring that into the equation, because even if you might have thought that there was a danger, whatever the case may be, the mere fact that the suspect, if you wanted to call it, he was abiding by your instructions. They at first told him to put their hands up or on the steering wheel, whatever the case may be, which he did. Told the officer what he had. Officer asking for his ID, a registration. So he goes to give it to him, and then he gets shot. The complete error is on him, because common sense is not even in his equation. He didn't have to make a decision.
Yeah, you would think.
Yeah. I would say that I was once told that common sense is not all that common.
Yeah, true.
And in this case, I 100% agree with you, because in a lot of instances, it does fall back a lot to, you'll get footage of a beating or footage of a shooting, but you won't get the events that led up to it. So it's a lot of, yeah, it's a lot of hearsay, speculation. Well, what happens, or why is it, you know, he's being beaten, he must have done something wrong. But now, if you abide by the letter of the law, if you abide by the letter of the law, it's basically like passing through customs. If you have any, you know, strange fruit or anything like that, you're supposed to declare it, right? The main thing is, and the hardest part is, if you abide by the letter of the law and it's captured on film that, yes, this person did nothing wrong, how can you even comprehend that the end result is that this person has bullets in them, they lose their life in front of their loved ones, and the child, who also is going to be traumatized by this for the rest of their days?
Yeah.
So better question is, at this point, after this week from hell, my question is this. Who is the law for? If a law-abiding citizen still ends up losing their life unjustly, I mean, at a certain point, it's not like we're crying wolf here. There's actually a wolf in the fold. There's a problem.
Yeah.
If the police officer is afraid to approach somebody in for a routine stop, for a routine check, and they're trigger happy or they're nervous, what? I don't know. Well, and it's like this week of just black lives lost, black lives lost, black lives lost, day after day after day. It's kind of being hammered into our heads. If there's a little bit of smoke, if there was smoke on Monday, there's fire by Friday or Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Well, before I even answer that, I'll just say that I just want to touch on something really quick with regards to the 4-year-old daughter. Now, my heart really goes out to the daughter, because even though she's calm in the video, and, you know, there's a part in one of the two videos where she's actually calming her mother down, you know what I mean? It's a tremendous, I mean, I couldn't even really watch it. This is what I was told by many, many of people. I just couldn't have the stomach to watch it. My thing is that even though Diamond Reynolds might need some counseling from this, on the low though, that daughter's going to need some constant attention. think about the next time she's in a car and she gets pulled over or just sees a police officer just absorbing all the pain around her, you know, from family members, her mother, friends, just the community around her, the funeral. This scarring, no matter how much counseling she gets, this scarring still might be permanent. You know, and that's the part that, like, makes my eyes water, you know, because I have a little girl, too, around that age, you know, and I can't imagine how she would react to that. You know what I mean? It kills me, you know. But to answer your question, though, like, the law seems like it's just for however the cop is feeling that day. Now, what I would say is this, too. There has to be some sort of a reintroduction of psychological testing when you're trying to hire a police officer. And the reason why I say that is because a routine traffic stop shouldn't incite fear. Something as simple as a broken taillight. Like last week, I got pulled over for not having my lights on. You know, that shouldn't be, once I put my windows down, you shouldn't have your hand on, you know, ready to cock the gun. You know what I mean? That's something that should be just so routine. It should be like breathing air. That should incite fear. There has to be a total recycling and reintroduction of that, just because like a guy like this should not be a police officer. Because if something like that freaks you out to this extent, the fact that the guy's black and he has a registered gun, something like this should not be aggressive. Especially, and you know, you can see the video, the windows aren't tinted. So you know there's a four-year-old, there's a kid in the car. Like, what would make you do that? That point of emphasis for fear, or point of basis, sorry, for fear. Like, where is that coming from? And if you have that inside of you, then you shouldn't be a person that has the law in your hands.
In regards to about the system being broken, to me, it's not becoming clear. I think it's becoming clear to a lot of other races and nationalities that I ain't black that live in America, that there is an ingrained fear that white people have of black people, period. Now, depending on your upbringing, where you lived, your encounters, et cetera, that either erodes, where now you can kind of make your own judgment on people as opposed to what people is told or what you see on TV. But clearly the ones who don't, depending on their upbringing, clearly has a fear of black people. Because as you said, Calvin, something as routine as that, and I've already put the theory out there that Diamond has been saying that there's never been a broken headlight. So they might have been just using that for an excuse. Were they, I don't know, trailing the wrong car for a wrong call where he thought he was coming into more danger than it really was? Who knows? Many a times, we all know cops don't need to have a reason to say you have a broken headlight just to stop you.
Right.
But it's like you're trying to find reasons why somebody, again, who's gone through so many steps. I mean, I know people, you know, who are police officers. You know there's different steps that you have to pass through. How could you pass through all those steps where the officers have to do some kind of psychological test where it's come to the point your hands are so slippery, so shaken. As you said, you can hear in the guy's voice even after the fact. Well, this guy's not even moving. He's moaning, and this guy still has the gun cocked. I mean, he shot him four times, point blank. You only need to shoot somebody four times to stop them. That you could be that shook, and you're supposed to be here to protect and serve us. The us means everyone. You know what I mean? And as you said,
Headley, I'm sorry to interject.
Oh, okay.
We would like to think that us means everyone. But it's quite clear right now with what's going on. It seems like there's a divide or let's say preferential treatment, let's say a different set of rules, let's say there's a disconnect.
Kevin, you know me. We know that. But there's some people here who truly believe, like that idiot that was on, I can't remember her name, but when Jesse Williams had that his speech at the BET Awards.
right.
about rights and all this stuff. There was this reporter, and she was like, you know, trying to rebut what he was saying, and really, I try to act like we live in an equal world in North America.
Mm-hmm.
You still got some people that really believe that. So that's what I'm saying, that you'd hope that there's some realization that it's not the case. And we're not just crying wolf. And even Calvin's talking about, like, you know what, starting with the Rodney King meeting. We started with the Rodney King meeting because that was like the first one of that magnitude for us. But obviously, you talked to the generation past, and we talked about this when, you know, we watched the OJ series. There was a lot of other similar events that happened before that that we just didn't know about because the world wasn't as small as it is now, and it was in their own little, you know, community. But this is not new problems.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
The sad thing is, though, is that it's generational. Like, our parents had the whole civil rights movement, and I mean, there's countless riots and countless things that happen and events that happen that, you know, you can pick and choose from, you know, from assassinations to riots, you know, to bombings. And then for our generation, we got Rodney King. And it's like, for this generation now is this. The one thing I will say about what Diamond did, though, is just representative of the fact that tech is illuminating this situation for us. Where something that obviously we never had a hand on before, because everybody's got a cell phone, everybody's got a camera phone, and can videotape and upload within seconds to whatever social media app that they have, right? So a situation like this. Now think about this. If she didn't live stream this on Facebook, because you remember, she got put into custody even after Philando Castile got shot and died. She was put into custody. She got her phone confiscated. You don't think they were trying to delete? If that was just a video, do you think they would have deleted that video?
I absolutely think that could be a possibility. And right. That is because the body of evidence from prior incidences. Yes, Rodney King is big to us because it was caught on video. And yes, it would be really hard to carry around a camcorder throughout the streets of Los Angeles and, you know, and look for incidences. But the only reason why we know about it is because somebody captured it.
Right.
But once you go to those communities, everyone will have a story. You can go to any pocket of, you know, where there's, I guess I can say a racial divide or a bit of racial angst, some hidden animosities or whatever the case may be. But there's always something. Now we're in the digital age where everything is uploaded, it's streamed, it's in a cloud. Even if they try to take her phone and break it,
yeah,
or you know, oops, we dropped it in water. We can't retrieve. Okay, fine. Well, I already saved it up to the cloud. It you know, you can't stop it. Her capturing that footage has led to a temporary outrage, just as the Rodney King verdicts led to a temporary outrage, like Trayvon Martin led to temporary outrage. And I'm running out of names, and there's not even enough time to go through all these different incidences. The thing is, there's temporary outrage, but there's no lasting change that's being implemented as a result. And it's almost like, oh, well, you can be beaten or shot off camera, your word versus our word, no conviction. You can capture the incident on film, oh, well, no conviction. There's no change that's happening. And that's the unfortunate, and it's almost like there's like a helpless feeling. There's an outrage that's going to be, you know, that's bubbling. Like, you know, like.
I remember, me and you were talking about this just a couple of days ago. Actually, right before the shootings in Dallas, me and you were having a conversation about this. When these cops do these things, when these cops do commit these acts, it puts so much pressure on all other police officers across the country. And not just in that station or in that city or that region. It's across the country. So you can be a great cop. And Headley, we know cops, right? Like we have friends that are, we have friends, we know people that are police officers. And they're great people, right? But yeah. As soon as they put their uniform on, people are looking at them like they're scumbags. And that's the thing when these situations happen. It shines such a light on the police, on the police system in a bad way. And for some, you know, whether it's deserved or not, like bad cop or not, something like the situation out in Dallas, I mean, that's completely heinous and ridiculous. Now, mind you, I want to say that I'm 1,000% surprised. I'm more saddened, but I'm not surprised because of all the things that's been happening for so many years that somebody would go out and do this. Now, obviously, I don't condone this in any way, shape, or form or fashion. Just the fact that, again, Haley, we were just talking about maybe like an hour before it happened, and then all of a sudden, you got 11 officers hit. You know, and the thing is, it wasn't in Baton Rouge. It wasn't in Falcon Heights, Minnesota. It wasn't in Brooklyn. It was in Dallas. It was in a whole other region, state.
Well, I'll say this much. Yeah, we're surprised, but you know what they say, that they say we're one bad apple, one spoiled apple ruins the bunch.
Right.
Unfortunately, because of these limited rotten apples that's in the court, it's making a bad image, a bad PR on everyone.
Right.
But Calvin, it's the same thing with black people.
Yeah.
You know how many times, every time I see a story, like, fuck, please don't let them up. Don't let him be black. And they put that mug shot up, they're like, ah, damn it. Because you got people, they'll see those reports and be like, yo, when they see a black person, the first thing that comes to their mind is, you know, they just think criminal. You know what I mean? They just think negative. I understand what's going on with the police. That's what, ironically, that's what they've been doing to us for centuries. You don't hear about the good African Americans are doing in the community, but damn, if something bad is going on, oh hell yeah. And all you got, how many times you hear about fucking false reports, and they'd be like, oh, so who was it? Oh yeah, it was a black teenager. And they're just making up some shit. Oh, you say it's a black teenager? Damn, that sounds feasible. You would have said it was a Filipino, I probably would have had to question you. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? So it's unfortunate. I mean, nobody should lose their lives due to any kind of extremist activities, right? It's like, it's saddening because we're doing this to one another, and it's just going, it's like a revolving door.
I agree. I would say that good news doesn't sell. Bad news does.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
No news starts off with a good feel-good story. Only on Friday do you get the story about, you know, the panda riding a bicycle or something to make you feel good. But anything else, anything uplifting or happy, that gets pushed to the back burner. It's usually the bad news that gets put out first. And unfortunately, it does sculpt a lot of people's ideas. But I have a question for you, gentlemen. Why do you think there's been such a hard, especially in America, not saying Canada's any, you know, like we're the kumbaya country of the north here, but why do you think there's been such a hard time with understanding each other's culture, and why is there still that fear that even somebody with a weapon, in more cases than not, will still feel intimidated by somebody that doesn't have a weapon and open fire?
Before you start that comment, I just want to answer one thing that Kevin said. You're right that bad news sells better than good news, but the problem with selling this bad news, it's now becoming an inhibited memory or thought process about black people, and it's not by accident or by chance that for the same crimes that youth makes, if it's a black youth or a white youth, 18 times more likely that a black youth is going to be as an adult as opposed to a Caucasian. And it's all because it's an embedded thought that if he's black, he's bad. It's almost like Pavlov's Law. I remember watching a documentary where you had kids who had black dolls and white dolls. It didn't matter if you asked the black child or you asked the white child, if you went, which is a good doll, which is the bad doll? And these are like youths, you know what I mean? Like 2 years old. And they would gravitate, even the black kids would gravitate that the white doll was good, the black doll was bad. or they did a doctor, they did a simulation where a black teenager was committing a petty crime as opposed to a white teenager, and you saw the difference how people treated them. Unfortunately, yes, that was better than good, but because of that, I want to suggest that, but a good portion of that, it's embedded a certain psychological, like, trigger in our brains by repeatedly seeing it. They say you see a commercial 7 times before you actually act on it. It's right. The same thing. You start seeing this, all this bad, 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 it, soon enough, you just think it just all blurs as to that person's bad, as opposed to why they're bad. But anyway, Calvin, I'll let you answer the question.
Well, even before I even try to answer that one, I just want to add a couple of things to this here as well. As you're bringing up stats here, now, I'll share this one with you here. There's been 559 deaths by police officers in the last 6 months, and 1,200 the year before. Now, you can, for people who think that things are changing, right? I'll give you another stat. So in 2015, more police officers were charged for deadly on-duty shootings more than any other year in the past 10 years. 1,200 deaths, right? Only 12 were actually charged. Think about that. 1,200 deaths, only 12 officers were charged. And only 2 were charged with second-degree murder. I'll share this thing that I saw today, this video I saw today on Facebook, probably about it right before we were about to set up this podcast. It was a panel on Channel 4 News in New York City. It was about black officers being ostracized from their peers for not doing the arrests to fill up their quotas. So because they're not harassing people in the black communities that they're working in, they're being retaliated against in their precincts. And the black officers are basically being severely punished in comparison to their white peers. And I'll just give you some of the quotes that some of the money quotes from this report was this. And this is going specifically to New York City in this case. There's nothing worse than a cop who needs to make an arrest to meet his monthly quota. And then another quote he said was, the commissioners want us to rack them up. And what they're actually told is, well, the type of community you guys are working in, this should be easy for you to make these numbers. And then the last one, which was like the money quote for me, was they're trying to change the amount of quotas that you got to get per month for the arrest in New York City. And he said basically, for the public, just so people know, he said the police department is a whore pretending to be a lady. Now, so it doesn't just, you know, and that was kind of illuminating for me in a little bit, because the racism obviously is, you know, it's infiltrated even in that depth. So even if you're in that case in America, or at least in that part of New York City, even though you're a black officer, you're still being marked on. So these guys, they basically know that their careers are pretty much done at this point by stepping out and having this panel. And so and to answer your question, Kev, it's why don't more cultures understand each other? I don't know. Honestly, this is something that's been going on for centuries. This the biases and the stereotypes has been trickled down and taught down the line. And it's something that needs to be stopped. It's easier said than done, because we have so much evidence of that not being done. I mean, we and for us, like, at least for myself and Henley, we live in Toronto. This is one of the most multicultural places on earth. So a lot of cultures are intertwining with each other, you know, learning about each other and learning about each other's cultures. And, you know, you're working with different people every day, whereas some places in the States, and Henley, you can attest to this because, you know, I know you lived in the States for a while. So especially when you get down south, like the thought patterns of what people are thinking, it's so archaic. So somebody like this, for example, like somebody who has those irrational racist thoughts, for example, when them or a few people are passing the academies, you know, and becoming police officers, you know, they're bringing that with them to work now. You know, that's affecting communities, you know, that's affecting families. You know what I mean? With that rigid way of thinking. Now, I know, like I said again, Hedy, I know you can speak to some of the stories that you might have had, you know, living in the States and stuff. But Like, I had a friend of mine that told me he went on a road trip one time and he got pulled over by the police officer. And the police officer actually said to him, when he wind down his window, "Okay, where are you niggas going?"
Yep.
And my boy said he sat there. My friend said he sat there and he didn't even know what to say. He said he was so caught off guard that he actually was just called nigger. Like, he was, it's almost like he said his name.
Well, to add to that, because I know the person who told him that story as well. When they checked everybody's ID and everybody was good, the officer handed back the ID and said, "All right, y'all niggas have a good day." So you can imagine, these guys were cleared of any wrongdoings. Like, they checked out. And he sent them on his way by calling them that. Like, that word and "have a nice day" should never be in the same sentence. But so ingrained. They don't even know what they're saying. They don't realize this is racism. Like, they feel like this, I'm above and you're below, and it's just what it is.
Yeah.
But do you really think that he didn't know what he was saying? Or do you think that he might have his racist thoughts, but he also has a badge and a gun, and he has the law behind him? And he has, and there's a long-standing history of no conviction, you know, mulligan-type attitude in terms of, you know what, I can say what I want, do what I want, and I'm pretty sure when those background checks came back and all the people in the car were scot-free, it bothered him to the furthest extent.
Yeah, you're right.
So instead of being able, like, "Oh, geez, well, they are good. I can't fill my quota.
I can't get away with it.
I might as well just stick them with a little N-word here and then be like, all right.
Send him with a shot on the way. Like, it's almost like the Benny Hill when the guy will walk away and you tap him in the back of the
head.
Yeah, you know? It's basically
you know what? Part two of your question, you're talking about, I think you mentioned something about how there's so much violence, like guns in this society, with, you know, cops needing to use excess force to control, for power and control. And I don't know what countries, but I know in Europe, there's some nations where the cops don't even carry weapons.
Wow.
And now, obviously not comparing apples to apples, but if you bring it to the same common denominator, by per capita, like, it's at a significant more rate than it is in the state. You know what I mean? So it and obviously, my answer is not, "Oh, take guns away from all cops right now," because you're trying to do something like that. That's obviously gonna fail miserably. Right. Obviously, this is something that it was something that had to be instilled or has to be gradually implemented. But point being, nowhere in the world does it say that lethal weapon and firearms is the way to do it. It's something that was adopted from here. It's in the history of that nation and in the history. So it's kind of been grandfathered. But there's a lot of nations where that they didn't come up with the same kind of war slavery type background, where their officers don't even carry weapons. You know what I mean?
Go ahead, Sadie. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that it's different in the States and Canada, and in North America as opposed to other countries. And I think it's what I just wanted to say real quickly when you're talking about the quotas and all that with New York. A lot of people don't realize that a lot of prison systems they're actually privatized. So they're actually a business.
Yeah.
So they're actually in the business of locking people up. It makes them money. It's not government run, not federally run. It's actually private money. So you start putting money with side by side with the greediest nation arguably on earth, with the United States. It's a recipe for disaster. Because
the prison system is privatized. I wholeheartedly, yes, you're right. Yeah. I think you're making reference to the United Kingdom. Because outside of, I think it's only
in the United Kingdom. Okay, I wasn't sure it was, but it was somewhere in that region.
But the UK's history isn't the same as American history. Is there really a coincidence that all this gun violence is happening in the United States, where yes, there is a higher history of violence and basically a carte blanche understanding that even the slightest attempt to have some sort of regulation, or like, listen, the mention that not everybody should have weapons, maybe not, even though it's written in the Constitution, maybe we can try and make an amendment to this, because not everyone deserves to have a gun. You make that mention, and you could be booed, hissed off stage, voted out of office. People defend the right to bear arms in the United States like Canadians defend the right to have Medicare or health care.
Yeah. Well, here's what I'll say, though, Kev. Now, sorry, I'm going to side rant just for a quick second. Now, with the NRA, right, seeing that Philando was a licensed, he was licensed to carry arms, right, how come they're not to his defense? You know, where are they to his defense, seeing that he is licensed to carry a gun in a state that allows you to do that? Where are they? How come we haven't heard a peep out of them? You know what I mean?
I know.
So, I mean,
how ironic.
How ironic, right? Now, what I'll say is this, and you touched on this, Kev. The example I'll use is this, and I heard this from Trevor Noah watching The Daily Show this week, and it's so true. That situation with the gorilla, right? And they had to take down the gorilla because they were afraid that it was going to harm the life of a four-year-old who fell down the embankment. Now, the zoo admitted there was systematic changes that needed to be done right away. And they fixed the fence. They made it higher. They made it more stable so that nobody can go over or underneath it, and put regulations and laws in there, right? Now, why can't they update an archaic right to bear arms law in the Constitution? Like, that law has been there since like the 1700s. And each state on top of that also has a different rule. So on top of everything else, not only is it outdated, but each state has their own set of laws. And for the most part, it seems, at least the perception is, that it's so easy to get a gun, which it is. You know,
exactly.
A couple of the situations with Tamir Rice and John Crawford, and John Crawford was about 2 years ago as well. Both of them died holding toy guns in Walmart, which is the largest toy and guns business company in the United States. These guys didn't get a chance, and on top of that, both of these situations happened in Ohio, and it's an open carrying state. So you're allowed to openly carry a firearm. So if you're rolling to a place like a Walmart and you see somebody holding a gun, it's basically going to a gun store. Like, you're shooting somebody holding a gun at a gun store. Wouldn't you at least think that maybe this person might be a customer? So when I look at this, like, the whole system needs to change. And I know it's, as you said, Kev, it's vehemently defended in terms of your right to bear arms. But it has to change. The system has to change. It is too easy to get guns. And I'm not even talking about police shooting blacks. I'm talking about mass shootings in schools. I'm talking about, you know, in public places. You know, the situation, of course, that happened in Dallas on Thursday. I mean, this is a systematic problem on top of that as well. Like, the gun violence is out of control. And there has to be something in the Constitution that needs to be changed. Or else, unfortunately, this is going to continue across the board. Like, the gun issue is not just a black issue. It's not a cop issue. It's a human race issue in the United States.
That is, to me, the issue. The one is, the main thing is, do you remember Bowling for Columbine?
Well, we all do, yeah. Of course, yeah.
Michael Moore, but have we forgotten about it?
No.
Do you remember the man that went into the movie theater and shot up the people in the movie theater?
Yeah.
Do you remember?
He was an ex-cop, too.
Do you remember the other shooting in the movie theater? Man. Where a teenager went and shot up the movie theater. Do you remember in Florida had a terrible week where somebody went into the club and shot up the nightclub?
That was just a month ago. Not even a month ago.
Do you remember? And now you have all this, you know, you just have that going on. That some of these have happened this week, and there's so much of it, we're so desensitized to it, we've actually forgotten some of them. What used to be a traumatic event is now like a weekly occurrence. Like, oh, what now? Nothing changes unless in my humble opinion, nothing changes unless there's some sort of control over who has access to firearms. Because one person who has schizophrenia, or, you know, it might not be there, should not have the right to have a firearm. You have the right to food. You should have the right to have, right to help and to, you know, earn a wage, but not the right to carry a weapon that can take somebody else's life. A country that has deep-seated racial divisions, not everyone should have the right to bear arms. Right. The best, easiest way for a misunderstanding to end is through violence. That's usually how most misunderstandings end anyway. You know, domestic or gun violence or whatever the case may be, it usually ends in violence because two people don't see eye to eye, or one person's afraid, or whatever the case may be. But if we can say this here because we don't have the same level of gun control laws, we have more gun control laws. So as a Canadian, I can say, like, well, maybe there needs to be some change to the system. But if there's a large proponent of people in the United States that don't want that, then this just continues to happen, and these stories keep building up, and it's just like collateral damage. Hey, this is the fate that they've chosen. This is what they want.
I'm going to say, at the end of the day, I mean, it's twofold. We're talking about two different issues. One, the easiness of getting permits for guns, and two, about the police, I guess, training and handling and graduation of cadets, or whatever you want to call it. So it's twofold. But both of them, the common denominator to me is that you got, when they say that you have to get to the root of the trouble, you have to get it from the head, that in order for these changes, because it's so embedded, you have to change in policy, right? At least in policy, if it's not going to change people's mindset, for the most part, it's going to change how they abide by it, because it's a ruled society. So if they don't believe it, but if it's against the law or if it's against policy, for the most part, people will abide for it. So they're forced to. So these systematic changes, we just have to get it at the head, and we just basically have to get people more in control who can affect change on that level, because getting it from that foundation upwards, it's not working in today's society. As we said, it's almost like there's been a stagnant from the times of, you know, the Martin Luther King and Malcolm X revolutionary days to decades where it seems like we're having these same problems. We need to have figureheads in the proper positions where they can spearhead that and bring it from up down as opposed to down up. That's just my thought process. It's a way to challenge it.
And to segue to that, and I totally agree with you, Edley. We're waiting for systematic changes at the top, but right now there's a groundswell of a group of people or a movement that's trying to systematically change it from the bottom going up, and that's the Black Lives Matters movement. Now, before I ask your thoughts, both of you guys' thoughts on this, for me personally, I think that the movement, you know, it's shed a light, obviously, going back to the situations of inequality and injustice. But I want people, and I've had some debates with some people this week, actually, believe it or not, about this, you know, talking especially about the whole, every time you throw the Black Lives Matter, people want to throw All Lives Matter, and I think it's somewhat disrespectful. But for those people, I want them to know that this is something that wasn't just thrown together. Obviously, this is something that's born out of desperation, and the way that it grows is that it wants to be fed resolutions, which it's not getting. So that's why it's continuing to stay hungry in this. Now, when All Lives Matters gets, you know, thrown as a rebuttal, why I say this is a sign of disrespect to me is all lives can't matter if black lives do not. This is why it was created. This is not a hip hop group. This is not somebody that's gonna, it's not a gang. You know what I mean? Or oddly enough, this is not just a hashtag. So I want to get your thoughts. Well, I'll start with you, Headley, first, but I want to get your thoughts on what you think of this movement, and do you think this is helping the cause in this sense a little bit?
Okay, I want to step back, and when you talk about all lives matter, I want to kind of segue into that in a different light. The teenager, the white teenager that died in California due to gun violence. I mean, I heard that.
Yeah,
I mean, you hear a different. Pardon?
No. I was gonna say, yeah. His name is Dylan. His name is Dylan. I think it's Dylan Truce or Dylan Boyce, I believe. Sorry.
Okay. So I mean, there's because he was stolen in the car. There's varying reports as to what exactly happened, but it sounds like they thought he was reaching for something and they shot him.
Even though his hands were up too.
Exactly. Now, what really pissed me off about that is that you had people that came, they did a visual, which is fine, but then they come up with these White Lives Matter hashtags and signs. And why I find that disrespectful is that, as you said, the Black Lives Matter revolution or group or whatever you want to call it came to light because of various reports over the course of the years that black men, young men, have been gunned down by police violence. Not for a one-off. Everybody's lives are important, as you mentioned. The reason why this group has came together, it's not because of one-off incident that's happened. It's because of an epidemic that's happening in the United States. If it was an epidemic where white men were getting shot down for no reason in the public, then by all means. But it feels like you're only doing this to channel against what we're doing when the situation is not nearly the same. You're doing it out of, almost out of either revenge or spite, as opposed to doing it for the true reason, because you see that there is a vast discrepancy in terms of how that particular segment of the population is being treated. But there is no issue with white, young white men in getting in situations like that. So why put up the white man's White Lives Matters hashtag? Unless you're trying
flag.
To rebuttal against what we're about the Black Lives Matter. So that really pissed me off.
Yeah.
And you said, all lives matter. You know what? There might be things about the Black Lives Matter movement that you're not in agreement in terms of their methods.
It might rub some people the wrong way, at least. Yeah.
Pardon? Say that again?
No, I said it might rub some people the wrong way.
Yeah, exactly. You might be against some of their methods. And everybody has an opinion. I understand the cause, and I'm absolutely for what they're trying to bring attention to. I just don't like it when the All Lives Matter and the All White or White Lives Matter kind of rebuttal is coming where I feel like they're trying to put shade to what the true issue is that's going on.
I'll say that for the White Lives Matter and All Lives Matter, they could be okay because they have, let's say, a small folder of cases, of incidences where, hey, look, stuff has happened to us too. But for the Black Lives Matter movement, it would feel more like they have a warehouse full of boxes, a warehouse and boxes full of folders of, look at this incident, look at this incident, look at this one, and here's this one. Now, this movement was started obviously out of, yes, they do want to see some sort of change. That's true, and awareness. In this generation, I think it's a hashtag, or it's something to put on a sign, but bottom-up change doesn't seem to happen that much. It would have to start from top-down, elected officials, some sort of, you know, some sort of better integration or something. But even for people to take objection to Black Lives Matter, that alone hints that, you know, like Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter versus White Lives Matter also, that too is like, how come we can't even get along on that to agree that something needs to be done? It's rather than turning people to infight over what's the right hashtag or what's the right name to come up with, rather than addressing the issue, the true issue. There is a long-standing, you know, history of violence going throughout this country. It's been 30, 40 years since people that have tried to initiate and instill change. People that have tried to instill change have been hailed down by bullets. John Lennon was pro-peace. He was shot down. Martin Luther King was pro-peace. Peace and understanding and integration. He was gunned down. Malcolm X, when he changed his philosophy, he was pro-peace. He was hailed down. He was shot down as well. It's been four decades, and it's like everyone's just turned a blind eye.
It's been more than that, Kev.
No, but I'm saying since they've passed away.
Yeah, right. It's been longer than that.
But like, it's so... There's such this history, and it's like nothing's changing. And I think that's what's so frustrating about it. You know, there are people that have been going through this for their entire lives, and they can't even say, like, yeah, I really think things have gotten better. That much better. Because some stuff is still, like, these incidences are still happening. Who will make the change necessary? That Calvin, I'll ask you this question. Who do you think will make the change necessary? We're on the verge of President Obama leaving office in October, right?
January.
In January, sorry.
Yeah.
Do you think the next presidential candidate is going to be one that will help instill this, help bring this change about?
Not if Trump gets it.
Headley, do you think so?
Put it this way, if Obama was fought tooth and nail to get equality, if it was, you know, especially with what was with Obamacare and all these other things, if Obama couldn't do it,
yeah, good luck.
I don't have a lot of faith in the next whoever takes reign next.
If it's
Trump, if it's Hillary, if it's whoever, I don't see it being better.
I think that if Obama was allowed to run for a third term, he would have to spend this whole third term just concentrating on this for that to start to work. It's funny going back to that the Jesse Williams speech on the BET Awards that you mentioned before, Headley. Now, of course, reading this even today, there was petitions going around with signatures to remove him from the show just from that speech alone. Obviously, they got to like 20,000 signatures. Something that Shonda Rhimes, the creator of the show, she dismissed with the quickness. Now, again, his speech to me, and it should be to everyone else, it wasn't to incite a war on Caucasians or that culture. It's to bring more attention to these situations and to demand change of injustice and inequality. You know, from celebrities to the poorest of the folk, we're tired of seeing this happening. I'm tired of writing hashtags about this. We've been fed up, you know, and that's the statement that's, I think, it's clear as day right now that people are seeing, that people can at least respectfully see that, well, the Black community is tired of having this. We're done with this, you know, and we want change. We don't, you know, we want it now. We don't want it in a violent way, but we want the change. We just want to be treated equal, you know, in this case.
It's like what you said. Like, if Obama had a third term, it would probably take his whole term to get it around. We us in the chat group of other members, we all talked about it. It was funny. It was interesting to me to see the similarity of the stories where, and these were all stories about here in Canada, where, you know, we're working in the corporate world, but, you know, so you have a certain decorum. You have a certain decorum that you're at work, a certain attire that you're at work, but if it's if the off chance that they see you outside of the work, or it's, you know, in a different environment, they're like, oh wow, you look so much different than when you're at work or whatever the case may be. Like, it's almost like they're trying to politely say, like, oh, you look like a nigga now. In so many ways. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. Like, it's so embedded. Even people, very nice people that, you know, you probably have, you potentially would have over to your home, you know what I mean, play with the kids, but it's so embedded that the prejudice, it's so embedded that some people don't even realize in their speech and in their thought that, oh, shoot, what am I really saying by that statement?
Yeah. Hedley, me and you have always had discussions on this personally about, at least with America, the racism is overt and it's in your face, but in Canada, it's hidden.
Absolutely.
Like, it's, and it's things like that where it's like, it's not in your face saying, you know, the N word in your face a million times, but it's simple things as, you know, as soon as you step into, say, like a wealthy store, a jewelry store, that type of thing, you know, how might I help you? You know, oh, we don't have that here. And it's like, well, I didn't ask. I just want to just check the rings. I don't know. You don't know. I might be proposing to somebody. You don't know. You know, why are you asking me that? You know, like, it's something as simple as that, you know? And that's some of the things that we go through, unfortunately. You know, it's a sad case. You know,
what's sad is that it's because of that some people believe, oh, there's no racism here.
Yeah, because it's not overt.
Because it's not in your face. It's a silent killer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They get you over time as opposed to, like, blunt force trauma.
Yeah.
It's like, it's almost harder to combat, because, like, some people truly believe that there isn't.
And that's, again, that's the sad part of this, man. It's, and just, I know we got to wrap up soon, but what I'll say is this again, and we've had this conversation in some of the chat groups that we're in, with regards to giving that speech, not the birds and the bees speech, but the speech about, as children, as we start to get older, we get that speech about, we just want you to come home safe. So if you get pulled over by police, just stay quiet, do what they say, keep your hands seen, make sure your hands are seen at all times, make sure you come home. It's almost something that's passed generation to generation, like an heirloom. And we got kids now. I don't want to pass that message on to my kids too, you know, but I feel like in 10 years that's coming. Like, that's the stuff that's the stuff that breaks my heart. Like, you know what I mean? Like, our parents taught us that, you know what I mean? I'm sure they were taught that. And now we got kids, you know, we're about to pass that message on now again. You know, and it's like I said, again, this is something that should not be generational. This is something that we shouldn't, this is knowledge that we shouldn't have to pass. But unfortunately, we do. You know, unfortunately, we do.
You already know my situation and how I feel about this. I mean, you saw my profile page. It's funny, interesting that I was having an argument. I would say an argument, a discussion with my brother-in-law about this. His rendition of the argument was, you know what? I'll paraphrase here. You're saying that, you know, you shouldn't want to have your children scared of the cops. They should be, you know, comfortable. You want them to be comfortable, be able to have a conversation with them and not fear the cops, but feel that he's on a level playing ground, has his rights, etc. What I was trying to tell him, especially now, I have a son who's turning 4 at the end of this month and a daughter who just turned 1. That is great in a perfect world, but we live in an imperfect world. I prefer my child coming home safe and alive, firstly, and secondarily, you know what, about being equals and learning and making sure that his rights are not violated, etc. It's, as you said, it's not the preferred. I guess, talk you'd want to have, but it's the real talk, in the sense that, you know what, I prefer that and him come back and he's alive to live another 30 years, to have children, to get married, so I can see my grandkids, and I can get old, and he can marry me and not vice versa. I take that picture any day for a misviolation of his rights, for whatever minutes, hours that it takes. Not to say that you take it laying down. You can always counteract, and you can recoup and recharge and figure out what the blueprint and the game plan is afterwards. But at the end of the day, I want, as much as my child, I've learned a lot of my child at four, in the first 4 years of life, I want to continue that for the next 40.
Now, I know we got to go just now, but just a couple things I want to ask, and I'll ask you, Kevin, right now. Just in the short term, what can we do from here? Like, what do you think we can change, and what we can do from here in this sense of everything that's been happening newly in this last week? What do you think that we can change from here? And I'm just talking everybody, like not just black people, of course, but just everybody as a whole. What can we do from here? What is your opinion on that? Like, what would you say to that?
I believe that if everybody acknowledges that there's a problem, and this and the open season is declared closed, and there's no longer a tolerance for any sort of unnecessary, unjust violence from police officers, from, you know, black on black crime, you name it. Just the acknowledgement that there's a problem with our society, and it's more than just a runny nose. The runny nose is just the side effect of the greater issue. But everyone, it seems like so many people just think that, oh, just get more Kleenex. Just wipe it. Don't worry about it. Your nose will keep running until you address the issue. And society has, we definitely have a problem. Something done in the short term, stop being so oblivious to it. Stop writing up all these headlines for all these, you know, or. So that's pretty much a loaded question, Calvin. I mean, the higher ups need to also acknowledge the fact that there's a problem, not just provide, you know, a handwritten state or pre-written statements about how bad of an incident this latest one was. That doesn't do anything that doesn't do as much, in my opinion, as trying to nip the problem in the bud, period. Are there bad police officers? Yes, there are. Are there bad teachers? Yes, there are.
But they're not all bad,
you know. Exactly. Are there bad priests? Yes, there are. Right? In any walk of life, there are bad, you know, there are bad doctors. There are some bad people. It can't take away from the fact that there are actually some good people.
Doing great things in the community.
Absolutely. But again, that's not what we're going to focus on right now. That's not what the outrage is going to be about, and the marches and the protests. It's about the bad. And there's so much bad going on. And until we acknowledge the fact that there is an issue, and we collectively want to do something about it, there will be, in my opinion, there will be no change. Okay. Because they'll just be sweeping it under the rug and making excuses for it.
Okay, and Edley, and what are your thoughts? Like, how do you feel in terms of what can be done short term?
Well, to echo what Kevin said, is that there has to be an acknowledgement that there's a problem. And acknowledgement just doesn't mean me, you, my you know, my neighbor and all that, understanding it, but acknowledgement where there's acknowledgement by law, meaning these cops need to stop getting off scot-free. If there's no ramification for their action, it will continue. You think of a child. If you tell a child over and over not to do anything, and there's no repercussions, there's no punishment, there's no timeout, taking away whatever he wants, going to bed early, if there's no consequence at the end of the day, why are they going to stop? If there's no consequences at the end of the day, it's going to continue. The governor of Minnesota said there's going to be justice in this case.
Good.
Let's wait and see.
Let's hope.
Let's see if it does happen. But until that happens, as I said, people are going to be racist. You're not going to be able to get that out of people's head. But if there's consequences for their action, then they'll at least stop prohibiting that or that spew that hate, where it's going to now have a permanent effect on their lives. If we can do that, you can spew the hate all you want in your house, but as long as you're not affecting what's happening to society, and if you do, you're going to pay for that. I don't see any change in that.
There's going to be repercussions for that. The only thing I'll add to what both of you guys said is, and I'm at fault for this myself, we have to know our rights a little better. Short term, we have to start educating ourselves on what our rights are, because I think sometimes people feel like once a policeman shows up, they feel like they have no rights. And as much as you want to, as we were just having this conversation about, you just want to get home safe, at the same time, you got to mix it in with the fact that you know your rights and know that they can't just search you. You know, like I remember there was a situation with myself where I had my wife's car and I was going by my mother's house, and I was driving down the road and a squad car drove past me. And as soon as I looked in the rear view, the squad car, sure enough, pulled around because the windows aren't tinted, pulled around, and I'm driving an Acura at the time. and the car pulled around. They pulled me over. They started asking me, you know, where does this car come from? Well, the original color of this was gray. Why is it green? I'm like, well, I bought this from an Acura dealership. We bought this from an Acura dealership. I don't know. There was only one other owner out from this. I don't think she painted the color over. And while they're, you know, going over the plates, going over, you know, the ownership and the insurance and everything else, finally, like, I went to them and I said, well, is there a reason why you're pulling me over? I have to go. Unless you guys are going to arrest me, or unless there's something that I violated, I have to go. And they left me alone. They just jumped in their cars and they left. But, and like I said, again, I'm guilty of this myself. Like, I think we have to start educating ourselves on the rights that we have, so that in a common collective way, we can at least go ahead knowing that we're educated in our rights and we know that these things can't happen to us and it should not happen to us. And we can start speaking right from when a cop shows up to say, well, you know what? Boom, you're doing this wrong. You're doing this wrong. No, you can't tell me that. No, you can't search me. No, you can't do this. You know, and I think that's a part of it, too. I think short term, that's another thing I would add to that as well. Just in closing, I'd like to get your final thoughts on the week's events. I'll start with you, Kevin.
A sad reminder that we are not as far advanced a society as we would like to be. We can come up with the greatest technology, be light years ahead of where, you know, where we used to be 20 years ago, you know, but how we treat each other still needs a lot of work.
And Hadley, what about you? What's your final thoughts?
As much in this day and world, we have integration between different cultures and races and creeds and all the different isms and that you can think of. We're in a world where there's a lot of acceptance. There's acceptance for people who are different from us. It's funny, or I shouldn't say funny, but it's ironic that one of the, I guess, the largest view or divide in our society when it comes to racism, specifically between blacks, white, cops, hood, whatever you want to call it, it seems like that evolution it's frozen. We've never, of all the stuff we came together, that it seems like we're still so far apart. And I wish I had answers. I wish I could, you know, put a magic wand to it, but it's just so ironic that one of kind of the most long-lasting problem we have is still with us to this day. We're free. We're not slaves anymore. But, man, when you think about just the thought process in some people's heads, we swear we're still back in those times.
Yeah, I totally agree with the both of you. Kevin, Headley, from the bottom of my heart, I love you guys. Thank you guys for doing the podcast today.
Ta-da.
Anytime.
Here are my final thoughts on this. I'm done with seeing these types of videos. I've been seeing these types of videos, or these kinds of videos, since I was a child. And I'm not interested in passing that tradition along to my kids like you do when you watch It's a Wonderful Life as a family during the Christmas holidays. I want to see change, and I want to see change as soon as possible. I'm down for speaking on issues with everyone if that means coming forth with some sort of resolution. But speaking about this has been happening for too long now. I don't want to see injustice and inequality any longer. I don't want to have the talk with my kids or my nephews or nieces or any other loved ones that I care about. Though sadly, I'm preparing for it. Back in 1971, Marvin Gaye came out with an album called What's Going On, a classic, timeless album about a Vietnam War vet coming home from the war to see suffering, hatred, injustice, and brutality. As I was listening to it last week, I started wondering, why is this album still relevant 45 years later? You know, and that's not a good thing. So the final thing I'll have to say today is, let's do more and work towards putting an end to what we're seeing. My name is Cal C, and I truly thank you for listening to the AF Podcast. Right on.